We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66 WFAN.
Well, it is good evening to you and AUB at 8:05 and 40 seconds to go right along with it on Thursday evening on your fan. New York City. Steve Summers here, you there, Peter Hoffman, Brian Rascona, they're on the other side of the glass, 1-877-337-6666 for another 2 hour Thursday schmooze right up until Jody McDonald at 10 on your fan, New York City. And a pleasure to welcome aboard for a couple of minutes Michael Lombardi of The Athletic. But that isn't all. We took Michael, I want you to know, we took about a half hour at 6:30 to let everyone know what you have done and what you are doing. And again, I think I could have filled your entire bio and all of the people that you have worked for and worked with in your NFL career. It's we could start alphabetically. And I mentioned, as I say, at 6:30, everything that you are involved in and have been involved in, and scouting and GM and Director of Player Personnel. I would say your life is the National Football League. Michael, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I appreciate it very much.
Well, as much as we do, that's for sure. Let me ask you first and foremost, how surprised, how stunned were you yesterday to hear the news that Adam Gase, the new head coach who has yet to coach a single game for the New York Jets, up and fired the general manager, Mike Maccagnan, who had been around for 4 years?
I wasn't surprised. I don't think, you know, I think Adam is getting kind of a bad beef here. You know, it looks like a power play. I don't think it really was ever a power play. I think this was a situation where Mike and Brian Heimendinger, the two main lieutenants of the Jets, and basically the constructor of the developer of the team the last 4 years, you know, they got to survive the Todd Bowles situation. And when you look back over those 4 years, the Jets, other than the first year when they went 10-6, the Jets basically struggled in every facet, players, coaching, and scheme. And really their drafts, their ability to acquire players, last year's offseason was disastrous. And so for Mike and for Brian Heimerdinger to maintain their jobs and the coach get fired, that surprised everybody in the NFL. But I felt like the longer it would go on, the more new people came into the building, I think there would become an awareness that the front office wasn't exactly where it needed to be to compete against the top teams in the NFL, and I thought he was eventually going to lose his job.
Yeah, there was, from column A, there were some pluses. Last year, of course, drafting Sam Darnold, who possibly can be the franchise quarterback. He certainly shows an upside. And he showed rookiness as well. And also in free agency, he spent a lot of money on four particular players with a lot of guaranteed money. But maybe Maccagnan had to do that to get these guys to play for a team and an organization with such a losing history. Do you think that Maccagnan should have gone when Todd Bowles went?
Yeah, I do, and I wrote about that for The Athletic. I think that, to me, the owner should have known enough about his organization to know that there was more problems, actually, in the coach in the player personnel side than they were in the coaching side, and equally as much. I mean, look, Mike made a trade to get Sam Darnold, but nobody talks about passing Patrick Mahomes in that draft to pick Jamal Adams, who's a wonderful player, but the scheme, and I wrote about this in my book, Gridiron Genius, the scheme today doesn't allow that dominant, hard-hitting, Ronnie Light type safety to have an impact on the game because everybody's concerned about player safety. Mm-hmm. That draft, passing Mahomes, passing Watson, that put them in a position to then have to go and trade a bunch of assets to get Darnold. I think we'd be looking at a different Jet team if Deshaun Watson was the quarterback or if Patrick Mahomes were, and we wouldn't be talking about this as much. I think that mistake really ultimately made him have to make another mistake. He traded up to get Darnold, which he gave up a bunch of assets. It wasn't a mistake, but they had to do it. I think that just compounded itself.
All right, let's start at the very top, because the cliche has always been, it starts at the top. You got Woody Johnson over in England having tea with the Queen and changing the diaper of the royal baby. And you have Chris Johnson, you know, playing the fiddle atop a burning Florham Park. Bottom line is, how much faith, if that's the right word, or confidence, if that also is the right word, do you have in the Johnsons running the New York Jets?
Well, I think this. You know, in 1984, I was working for Bill Walsh. It was my first year in the draft room, and he told me, you were only competing against eight teams, kid. And that was when the league was 28 teams. And he meant, and I thought he meant, that he was talking about more about the quarterbacks in the league, more about the talent of the other teams, and really what he was talking about, eight teams that had culture. Mm-hmm. And the Jets, for whatever reason, have had an inability to want to develop a culture from the top down. I think what Gase is trying to do is develop that culture. But there's always been a disconnect. I mean, when McKagan got the job, he never brought a culture with him. I mean, I think where you look at the owners should give you a direction. Here's who we want to be. This is the kind of football team I want to have. Mm-hmm. And then the people that work for him have to go put that culture in place, and everybody has to be on the same page. I think what you have in New York at the Giants and at the Jets, when the general manager picks the players and the coach just gets to coach the players, that's very 1980-ish. You need a collaboration between the head coach and the general manager. The head coach needs to be the main person in front of the team, and the GM has to support the role, much like you see in Seattle with John Schneider and Pete Carroll, and I think you see it at other places in the NFL. It can't be scout, coach's coach. That era of football is gone, and I think the Jets have to modify and change.
Talking with Michael Lombardi of The Athletic, and the Jets have a system where the head coach would go to the owner, in this case the owner, Chris Johnson, because of Woody in England, and then also you would have the head coach go to him, and you would have the general manager go to him. Is this kind of system workable? Is it the kind of situation, is it the kind of system that works, or should you really have one person, the general manager, going to the owner to talk about player personnel? In other words, the Jets have two guys.
I'm a former GM, and I would tell you this. There's never been a monument dedicated to a committee. So the committee mentality doesn't work. What I think has to happen is the head coach, like Belichick has in New England. The head coach, everything needs to run through him. The players must know they work for him. The GM has to pick the players, but also has to understand the type of players the head coach wants to build an organization around. Now, the head coach can't go and say, well, my running back coach wants this guy and my receiver coach. No, the head coach has to have a broad 30,000-foot picture to say, this is the kind of team we are going to build. This is what I want to be. When Bill Belichick walked into the Cleveland Brown organization in 1991, he handed me a piece of paper and said, we are going to build a big, fast, physical football team that can play in every element and who's smart. That's what we wanted to build. That's what we developed, a grading system in Cleveland that's still utilized today in New England. In fact, it's even utilized at the University of Alabama. That system allowed us to build a culture and an organization in Cleveland until we got fired in 95 when he moved the team. The point here is it has to come from the coach. And it's not baseball. Football's not baseball. It's not basketball. It's got to be in front of the players. It has to be a command performance. And the one thing that I know is that the Dave Clark Five never works. A paramilitary organization needs a one supreme leader, and it starts at the top.
And is Adam Gase going to be that supreme leader for the New York Jets?
Well, they hired him, so he's going to have to be. And I think Adam understands that role. Now, where Adam's going to need some help, Adam's going to need some help in team building. Adam's going to need some help in how he finds and procures players and how he sits there. And he has to have his assistant coaches working for him just like everybody else does. So I think he's going to need some help. Look, let me say this to you. There's a book out called The Trillion Dollar Coach. It's about Bill Campbell, who used to be the head coach of Columbia. Most people, Bill Campbell got fired at Columbia. He went out to the Silicon Valley, and he started coaching some of the great people in the Silicon Valley. If Steve Jobs needs a coach, and he did, he hired Bill Campbell, then most of these coaches need somebody to help and advise them. And I think that's what we miss a little bit in the NFL. We become a subcontractor league in the sense where an offensive guy just calls plays and he tries to manage the game. That doesn't work. You need somebody to help you to see the game from 30,000 feet. And I think Bill Campbell helped Steve Jobs. I think there's other people that can help. And Gase is going to have to utilize some of those people.
Gase comes to the New York Jets, and the guy that hired him, he fires. And, of course, in Miami, he alienated just about everybody, Michael. I mean, from ownership to players to assistant coaches to fans. I mean, he just and has not won. He comes to the New York Jets as a loser and as a attitude, the alpha male that takes no prisoners. Is it already the beginning of a circus again with the New York Jets?
Well, I don't think so. I think with Darnold, at least they have a quarterback. They're going to have to improve their talent base. Their talent base is not very good. McKagan did not draft an offensive lineman until this year in the first three rounds of the draft. Now, if you go to school on Team Building 101, the first thing they teach you is draft offensive linemen if you want to win a game. If you want to build a good team, have a good line. And so they never did that at the Jets. So Gase is going to take over a team that is not very talented, that's going to struggle. He's got to get the quarterback to play well. Look, I think the one thing we do know in the NFL is you're going to learn from your mistakes. The same lines, the same words that you use to describe Gase, and I'm not suggesting that he's the next Bill Belichick, but that was the same conversation that people were having in New England when Belichick went up there. You got to give a guy a chance to see if he's improved, see what he's learned, see how he's adapted this thing, and see where it goes. And I think how he handles each situation uniquely. It's going to be critical that he hires somebody who's got vast experience, who has enough authority to walk in the room and say, you know what, Adam? I don't think this is a good idea. We need to talk this through. And he respects that person enough to listen to him. I think that's going to be critical.
We hear that Adam Gase is not happy. We don't know how true this is. We hear so much with the rumorizing, Michael. But we hear that Adam Gase, who is not a big fan of running backs, that's number one, and not a big fan that McKagan overpaid for Le'Veon Bell, which probably he had to do to get him to sign with the New York Jets. Your thoughts?
Well, I don't think he had to because Le'Veon Bell didn't have any other options. I mean, he was negotiating against himself. So I think what I think is getting lost in this conversation is I think Gase believes, like I believe, that the running back position, there's a vast amount of them. I mean, there was an opportunity for the Jets to draft Alvin Kamara in the third round, and John Morton, then the offensive coordinator of the team, really was pushing for Kamara, and the general manager wanted to draft another receiver, didn't pick him. So you can find running backs, but that's water under the bridge now. I mean, Gase has got to figure out how he can best utilize Bell and what he does. Bell not showing up to these minicamps, not being the leader. When you give somebody all the money, you want him to lead, too. You want him to impact your football team, not just on the field, but off the field. And I'm sure that bothered Gase. I think the key here is they're going to have to find a way to structure this team. They're going to have to find a way to get Bell to buy into what they're trying to do. Because the one thing I've known in the NFL, unless you all buy in, you're never going to win.
Right now, if you talk to a New York Jet fan, they think the sky is falling. We're talking a dysfunction and malfunction. Now, if you talk to some fans of the New York Football Giants, they are basically saying the same thing. Dave Gettleman, with the number six pick, just about had everybody with the jaw dropping, especially New York Football Giants fans, for what he did with that number six pick, drafting Daniel Jones, quarterback out of Duke. Your thoughts?
Well, I think this. You know, I did not think Daniel Jones was the sixth best player in the draft. I've always maintained the Giants, they should have drafted Sam Darnold the year before. I think the misjudgment of where Eli is in his career is a bone of contention between my evaluation and what Dave Gettleman and the Giants organization thinks. I think that they believe, and Gettleman's been quoted as saying as such, that they believe that Eli has three or four more years, that he actually played well last year. Well, I don't believe that to be true. The Giants are 2-14 the first eight games the last 2 years. If you have a franchise quarterback, you're not 2-14 to start off the season. If you have a franchise quarterback, you don't have 31 wins in the last 5 years. That's the key to football, is to get a franchise quarterback. And if you're not winning with your franchise quarterback, then you got to look at him. Maybe he's not. So I think the overreaction to pick Daniel Jones, I believe this. I think it was a mismanagement of the draft, in the sense that if you like Daniel Jones, I like Daniel Jones. I didn't think he was the sixth player in the draft. Pick the sixth best player in the draft, get the value for the pick, and then take your 17th pick and try to trade up to get Daniel Jones. I think more criticism about the actual management of the draft than actual picking what Daniel Jones is, because no one really is going to know for sure until he starts to play.
Would you have taken Josh Allen, who was there to take?
I would have. I would have taken the best defensive player I could have, because here's the reality of the draft. The draft, you're not collecting baseball cards. You're picking the best player. You have to look at the vertical board, which is the players lined up at the position that you feel you need. And the most important board is the horizontal board, the ranking of the player. There's nobody that could tell me that Daniel Jones had a higher grade than Josh Allen. There's just no way. So that's the horizontal board. And when you don't play into the horizontal board, you tend to make mistakes.
And, of course, as you pointed out, and as we all believe, the Giants think, at least we are led to believe, that Eli Manning, this is not his final year. And most of us think, yes, a lot of us think Hall of Fame, but at this point in time, he is on the back nine of his career, and arguably more the problem than the solution. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it's the hardest thing to do is, look, I think Eli's had a great career, and I think he's won two Super Bowls, and I think the Mara family and the Tisch family are extremely loyal to that, and I applaud them for it. But this is a business, and you've got to make some emotionally tough decisions. And I think based on the way Eli has played, and you could say, well, his offensive line hasn't been good. I think if you read John Mara's quotes or you read Dave Gettleman's quotes, when they start talking about, well, if he has a better line, if he has better receivers, when you start putting if you have better this and that, you're not talking about a franchise quarterback. You're talking about a guy you're managing. And for me, that's what I've seen the last 2 years. You're 2-14 the last first eight games of the season. The Giants have won two games over the last 2 years. They've been 1-7, 1-7, 2 years in a row. That's 2-14. That's not a franchise quarterback. And you can say, well, it's this and that. Well, okay, fine. I think what you learn is you've got to be honest with yourself. The hardest thing to do is to evaluate your own team correctly. And if you can't evaluate your own team correctly, how can you evaluate someone else's team?
And, of course, Dave Gettleman, I mean, listen, Dave Gettleman came back to the New York Football Giants, as you know, because he had been with them years ago, and he had been at Carolina, did not draft Cam Newton, was the GM there, alienated some players in letting them go, but nonetheless, overall, the record fairly decent, fairly good, a lifer like you are with the NFL. You think he's the right man running the show, picking the players for the New York Football Giants?
Well, I think you got to give him his chance. I mean, look, I disagree with his evaluation of Eli, but he has the juice to make the decision. I don't. I just can comment on it. I think it's going to really come down to his belief and evaluations over the last 2 years and where that team lies. If this team doesn't get off to a good start and this team ends up 5-11 this year, then I think Dave hasn't really evaluated the team correctly and made the adjustments you need to make. So I think you need to give him time. I only got 1 year in Cleveland to be the general manager. 1 year is never enough to really find out if you're any good at what you do. You've got to get a little bit more time. I think he needs a little bit more time.
Of all of the people you have worked for and all of the people that you have worked with in your NFL career, we mentioned earlier how, and you too, with Bill Walsh, Al Davis, Bill Belichick, is Belichick the most respected head coach? Well, he certainly has the Super Bowls. He certainly has all the wins you can have. And we're talking about a dynasty with the Patriots. But of all the people you have come across, would he be at the top of the list?
Yeah, there's no one better than Bill. I mean, look, I love Coach Walsh. Walsh was amazing. Walsh didn't have to deal with the salary cap. Walsh had Eddie DeBarlo's money to make some situations better for him. Belichick's been operating and building a team in a cap environment, which is challenging because this salary cap creates a situation where the name on the back of the jersey is more important than the name on the front. and that becomes problematic. He is by far the greatest coach. He's the hardest working coach. He's also the best general manager in the league. So when you add those two things going together, it's really remarkable. Look, let's just put things in perspective. And I know Giant fans think, well, Lombardi's a homer because he and Belichick are boys. Well, here's the facts. The Patriots have won 74 games over the last 5 years. The Giants have won 38. The Jets have won 28. The Jets and the Giants, if you combine their wins together, don't match the Patriots' 74 total wins. Belichick has lapped the field. The next closest team to 78 four wins are the Steelers at 57. He's lapped the field.
And Brady, how much longer?
I don't know. That's always a hard question. When I went there in 2013, I wasn't sure Tom had much left. And we won a Super Bowl in 14, won another one together in 16, and, you know, won another one in 18. I mean, he's really been remarkable. I watched him on the treadmill the other day running. It's fascinating what he's been able to accomplish. The team is going to continue to get better. Look, they've had no lulls. I mean, the reality of this is, you measure your success in the NFL. People say, well, how many Super Bowls? Well, that's great. Hard to get to a Super Bowl, right? I measure the success in the NFL by conference championship games. How many of them have you been to? That's the Final Four. Getting to the Final Four is a hard thing to do in the NFL. Patriots have been to 8 in a row.
You think the NFL has gotten softer?
Well, I do. I think this trying to eliminate the kicking game makes it harder. I think that's where Belichick has gained an advantage, is because his team practices in December. His team practices in November. They don't take the pads off. They keep working. I think it has. I think when you look back at their team last year, they were in more two backs than any team in the league, and they were running the ball effectively out of two backs. And so they've taken the opposite approach. Yeah, I do think. I think as the year goes on, teams get softer. And the other thing they do is they get more out of condition. And teams can win in the fourth quarter against those teams.
And do you know what a catch is? Do you know what pass interference is? Do you know what roughing the passer is? We don't know the rules anymore.
I don't really know those. I think they're all predicated on who's officiating the game. I do not think there's a standard or a level the standard is not the standard when it comes to that. I think I do know what a catch is now. I'm not sure I know what roughing the passer is, and I definitely have no clue about pass interference.
And what is the difference between pass interference and defensive holding?
Well, I mean, defensive holding, when you see a jersey pull or tug, that's holding. That one's pretty easy. When you see a guy long arm a guy, that's pretty easy. But when two guys are competing for the football, yeah, that becomes a little iffy.
The Giants got rid of Odell Beckham Jr., sending him to Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. Would you have done that as a GM?
Well, I think Odell Beckham has really been mismanaged. You know, they put his picture up next to the Super Bowls after he made that incredible catch. You know, they've kissed his butt for so long, and then they got mad because he turned out to be the person that he always was. You know, and then Odell's talking about, I'm going to make the Browns into the Patriot way. He shows up for one OTA in Lee's Town. You know, so, look, I don't think you win with guys that value the name on the back of their jersey more than a name on the front. Do I think he's talented? No doubt. Do I think he's durable? No. He's only played one season where he's played all 16 games. Last year, you know, for whatever reason, he disappeared in the final stretch of the game. With the injury, how bad, I don't know. I think it's going to be problematic for Cleveland to bring all these kind of guys together and see if they can work hard enough and do the things they need to win. The Giants' mistake was, for me, watching it from afar, is, look, you knew who Odell was. Why did you give him the contract? Why didn't you just let him play it out?
We had issues with Gettleman talking about a plan, but nobody in New York that we know of could figure out what his plan was. He got rid of Landon Collins, could have franchise tagged him. All right, a safety in his prime. But then he goes about saying, well, we want to rebuild and win at the same time in so many words, and then signs also with the safety position, Bethea, who's 34 years old, gets rid of Odell Beckham Jr., and signs Golden Tate, who is 31 and also a slot receiver, much like Sterling Shepard. Who's going to be the wide receiver for the New York Football Giants?
That's a great question. You know, I think Shepard belongs in the slot, and I know Golden Tate belongs in the slot. Golden Tate's market really wasn't what Golden Tate thought his market was going to be. Went to the Eagles. They tried to play him outside a little bit, but there was no room because they already had an inside receiver in Nelson Aguilar, so they didn't really want to put him inside. My sense of it is I think if Tate lines up outside, it will really affect the Giant offense. Look, the Giant offense is going to be around Barkley, and we know this about the NFL. Running backs have a hard time carrying teams. quarterbacks carry teams. That's just the fact. And we're going to see if they can do it. And I think the receiver situation at the Giants, because what's going to happen is Ingram's going to get jammed or doubled at the line. When he's in the game and they're in what we call 11 personnel, one back, three receivers, there's really no run game to his side. So you don't have to worry about that as much. You're going to have to really treat the outside receivers. They've got to make plays. If the field shrinks and they defend the middle, it'll be a challenge for the Giant offense.
Okay, and Michael, before we let you go, two final questions in one. Who wins the AFC East? Who wins the NFC East?
I like Philly to win the NFC East. I think Philly's primed to do that. I think Philly will come back and be strong. I think the AFC East is New England's to win. I think Buffalo's improved tremendously. I think Buffalo's got a better team than they had. I think Miami will go through a rebuilding, and I think so will the Jets. I think Miami has the advantage of playing those early games. They open up two games. They play Baltimore, New England at home in that heat and humidity. They always steal some of those games.
Michael Lombardi, I can't thank you enough. Michael Lombardi of The Athletic. He has a podcast called The GM Shuffle. And also with SiriusXM, a Saturday morning sports betting program. So you're a busy man, and we thank you very much for your time with us tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.